and welcome to Just Plain Wrong, the podcast where three Mennonite librarians discuss depictions of Amish, Mennonites, and other plain groups in popular culture. I'm Abby, your moderator for this episode, and with me is my co-host, Erin. As a reminder, this season, our beloved Tilly is in Ecuador, so while she remains a part of this podcast, she is on temporary leave. This episode, we'll be starting off our sixth season by discussing a few non-podcast-related books we read. But to start us off, I thought we should ask an opening question that is relevant to both Erin and I, events in our lives over the last few months, which is, how would you rate the process of moving / renovating houses? Erin, why don't you start?
Oh, God, the actual process, I don't know, maybe like a 2, but the owning of a house, I mean, we lived for a year in a, oh gosh, I don't even remember, maybe a 700 square foot apartment. That might be generous. I don't remember, but it was pretty small. Literally, there were like the only door other than the door to the apartment was the bathroom. Like our bedroom didn't have a door. My office didn't have a door. It was basically like a studio with some walls. So just having a house and a space and me having my own, like, because I work remotely. So an office with a door, all of those things have been lovely and make it worth it. But yeah, oof. This is our second fixer in a row. And it's sort of like you look around, you're like, this will never be done. And you try to look at it optimistically somehow instead of as dollar signs, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes, we are. I am thrilled. Like at the Portland, I mean, the Goshen housing market is also kind of a beast, but the Portland housing market was, we kind of knew it was going to be tough going into it. And it was. And so we're just kind of thrilled we found a place at all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Well, I realize, I guess I haven't told our listeners this, but in December, just about, I think it's only 2 weeks before Christmas, essentially a house opened up 2 doors away from my family, which includes both my parents and my brother and sister-in-law and their kids. And so my husband and I did it was the fastest, like most expensive, spontaneous decision I've ever made in my life. But we, it was like literally, I think a 4-day span. We went from not having no plans to move to buying, to making and having an offer accepted on a house. So I think similar to you, I feel very, very lucky because I know buying a house is a complicated thing that is out of reach for a lot of people. And this was, so being able to do that was huge. And I will say the actual new house. So in the time since then, we have made the move. The actual new house, 5 out of 5. The house itself is not necessarily perfect, but it's a nice house. And like living close to grandparents and cousins, like my kids' cousin, like, are going to be able to, you know, grow up with cousins essentially across the street from them. Is everything we hoped for. Like right now I walk my kids to work and often most days my dad will come and take the dog and walk with us on the little walk to work / school. However, if you were talking about the process of moving, that I abhor. So I wanted to make a couple caveats, but the actual process of moving is the worst. And I will say I am discovering there are definitely pros and cons to a local move. In some ways, the pro and the con is the same thing in the sense that the pro is that you have the flexibility of going back to your old house to make multiple trips. The con is that you can drag that out. And we are still not fully moved out of our old house. So, and my motivation to do it is low because it's just like, we have most of the stuff we need. So a lot of the like last dregs are like sort through things that we haven't looked at in a long time and all of that kind of thing. So that part I am not liking at all, but I am really liking being moved and being in the new house. And so, yeah, so we did want to let you all know a little bit what we're thinking about with season 6. So to talk about season 6 and what our plan is, we're thinking that we're going to do another 10 episodes similar to season 5, hopefully finish up when around the same time when Tilly returns and the academic calendar picks up again in August. And we're going to continue with our every other week schedule. But this season, we are going to be focusing on interviews. So we are still lining our guests up, but we're essentially looking to talk to interesting Anabaptist-related people, which is, feel free to be, you know, it can be interpreted broadly. So if you have ideas of someone that we should talk to that you think would be a good person to have on the podcast, please let us know. Send us an email, send us a DM. We are would love to hear it. We do have some of our guests lined up and we're pretty excited. We have a Mennonite influencer. We have some history scholars. We have, we're going to have to do an episode, the long-awaited episode about the Enneagram that Aaron and I have been hoping to do for a long time. And we also, we have a number of different authors that we're trying to line up. So yeah, we're excited about the season and hope to see, excited to try this slightly different format.
I will give a quick update from Tilly, though we haven't actually heard from her in a little bit. So this is sort of broad strokes updates. The last we heard from her, the students were out on their service term. So for anyone who's not familiar with the Goshen College study abroad setup, it's in two parts. I actually haven't gone on it, so maybe I'm the wrong person to talk about it. But it's like the first part where they're learning and learning about the country they're living in. And then the second portion, they actually go out and live with a host family and do service. And so a little bit different set of priorities for Tilly now that the students are not like there. They are with their families.
One quick correction. I was just one quick thing I was going to say. So they have host families in the first part. But they're all basically the unit stays together, usually in a kind of more urban area. And then in service, they have a different set of host families and they're more scattered and not all in the same area.
One of those things I'm like, sure, I can talk about this. And then as we talk about it, I'm like, huh, I actually.
You got, for someone who didn't go to Goshen, you got very close.
And so this is the spring unit. So the spring unit is about halfway done. And then there's a summer unit. And again, as Tilly, as Abby mentioned earlier, she should be home in early August to be one of our final interviews for this season. There is a blog. If you want to follow along on Tilly's adventures, you can go to goshen.edu/Ecuador and read up on the blog what she is doing.
All right. So for the main section of this episode, we are going to talk about books we read that have nothing really to do with anything Anabaptist related, but we're librarians at heart, at least, and this is what we like to do. So, Erin, why don't you start us off?
Sure. Okay. So the first book I want to talk about is one. This book came out, I think, in 2011. So I am way behind when it comes to this book, but it is so good. So Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. If you have not read it, it should be on your to-read list. I read it and was like, how, I think I put in my Goodreads review, how did it take me like 15 years to read this book? It was incredible. It is the story of Achilles, like the Greek myth man, but it's told primarily from the perspective of his, I guess, lover in the case of this retelling. And I'm going to butcher the name, but Patroclus?
I'm unfortunately, as someone who reads more than I speak about these things, I cannot help you out. I'm sure our listeners can.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a queer retelling of the story of Achilles. Madeline Miller wrote more recently the book Circe, which I have also read and loved. She's just, I am not a person who, like, we covered, what, the Odyssey my freshman year in high school. I can't say I loved it. Greek mythology is not something I really care about. But yet her retellings are just written so beautifully and so compellingly. That I strongly recommend. So yeah, it's the Song of Achilles. Again, follows the story. I don't want to give spoilers, but I think probably 90% of the people listening to this have already read it. I will just say it was not a story I was super familiar with, but I loved reading about the lives of these two characters and how they were intertwined. It was very sad towards the end. I finished it on a beautiful day here in Portland where I was sitting in a park and I was just like crying. Mm-hmm. But like it was both sad, but then the ending was very satisfying. It was a happy, sad sort of ending, the final pages. Did I even talk about the book? I don't know. But if you haven't read it, you should read it.
Well, I was just going to say a hearty ditto to both of those. It's been a while, but I have read both Circe and Song of Achilles. And I think what I really like, I am also not an I'm not an expert in Greek mythology, but when I, after reading both of them, I went and like looked stuff up and was like, oh, mm-hmm. what is the story? And from my understanding, like she does one of my favorite things, which is take like the main points of it. Like she essentially takes the legends or the myths and their most common like plot points and leaves those there and includes those, but then weaves all of these other just creates these rich characters and gives you such a different understanding that like you're left with a totally different vision of what the story was while it follows all of the same beats that the legend does, which is, I just love stuff that does that where it says like, oh yeah, that's the story, but let me take you behind and tell you what mm-hmm. was really going on and what those characters were really thinking. And I think she does it absolutely so well in both of those books. I also second those.
Yeah, they're books you read with like the Wikipedia page open because you're like, is this something that's from the original myth? And like so much of it is, but yet yes. she's able to turn these rather like sparse stories into full books. And like character, like, you know, what's his name? Odysseus is in all these books. Mm-hmm. Like he's just kind of floating yes. around. And so the stories, you know, because you had to read them in high school English, like
right.
creep in interesting ways. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Well, for my first pick, I'm also going to pick an older book. and it's also one of my, I might have even mentioned it on this podcast before. It is a book I have literally read now probably 5 or 6 times. I love this book for whatever reason. It's just become one of my favorites. It's World War Z by Max Brooks. And it's basically, I think even the subtitle, it's like an oral history of the zombie war. So the idea is zombies are real. There's a big apocalypse. They almost wipe out humanity, but humanity figures out a way to survive and does. And so I both love like, because I do like post-apocalyptic stuff. So I love that angle. But the idea of oral histories is such a genius way to do this because you get to hear like the stories and little slices and bits of this like big worldwide event that happened from all these different people from around the world. And what made this like rereading / re-listening to, or I guess first listening to, is I have read this book many times, but this time I'm not super into audiobooks, but I listen to the unabridged full 12-hour audiobooks and has a full cast, which is just an excellent pairing for this type of thing. Because I will say, I was quite disappointed by the movie adaptation of this book, because while they kind of took the plot points, they dropped much, almost entirely the like oral history part. So I have long thought that this book is ripe for a like a TV miniseries document-esque style, like documentary style adaptation. I don't think that's ever going to happen. So I think this audiobook is the closest thing I'm going to get to that, because it was a full cast. They did an excellent job. It was so good. And I just really enjoyed this like fresh take on this book that I have read many times now and I'm very familiar with, but to hear it come to life was really enjoyable.
I haven't read this book, but it's giving me flashbacks to when I guess I'll say the good old days of when I still worked at the Goshen Library. And the number of hours we spent discussing the zombie yes. apocalypse and whether yes. or not the Goshen College Good Library was a suitable place to be like refugees during the zombie apocalypse. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Spoiler alert. It is not. I could go into all of the details. So not only did I read this book, I then also read Max Brooks. He wrote another whole, like a survival guide. So took the same world and the same way that the zombies work and all of that stuff, and then wrote a literal survival guide about it. And I've also read that. And that also sparked this whole obsession with evaluating the best way to handle zombies. And unfortunately, the Good Library is not your ideal retreat place, largely because you can't get rid of the stairs. Because you need a place where you can get up high and then get rid of the stairs behind you, because that's, you want to not like the zombies will get up there eventually.
You need to destroy multiple staircases in the Good Library.
Yes. So, yep. No, if people want to talk about zombie survival techniques, feel free to email me.
Abby is your girl for that. Definitely.
Yes.
All right. Well, my second book, I think the rest of my books are actually all new within the last year. I don't know. I have to check on the last one. Fun fact for our listeners. I think we started thinking we were going to each talk about maybe two books and then we couldn't narrow it down. So we're each going to talk about four. So sorry, you're welcome.
Yeah.
The second book on my list is called Divine Rivals. It's by Rebecca Ross. I think it came out middle of last year, sometime in the second half of 2023. It is classified as YA, though the main characters are, I think, 19 and 20. I picked it up because it was described as a fantasy You've Got Mail with typewriters. And I was like, You've Got Mail being the 2000s rom-com movie with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan that everyone who was in high school during that era loved, including me. Anyway, so that's what prompted me to pick up this book. And yeah, I occasionally had to remind myself that it was YA. And that helped me. Like, I think I gave it 4 or 5 stars. I ultimately really enjoyed it. So it's about two young folks. Again, I can't remember if they're 19 or 20, and I can't remember their names right now. But they are competing. They are competing for a position to be a correspondent at a newspaper. The time, like the era, this is clearly in a fantasy world. It feels like it's in the past, like maybe in the 1920s or 30s, but because it's set in like a fantasy universe, it's unclear like when exactly timing wise this is taking place. But yes, these two people are competing. One is a young woman. I want to say her name is Ingrid. She comes from a poor background, really needs this job, like basically an orphan. Her father is not in the book. Her mom dies early on. We should also say we are going to be saying spoilers. So if you're going to read any of these books, please fast forward if you don't want spoilers. And her brother has been recruited to fight in the war between the gods. So the rivals here is both about this competing couple, these two people competing for the correspondence role, but then also this larger conflict between various gods that are recruiting humans to fight a war on their behalf. And her brother has gone off to fight in this war. The other person competing for the job, oh, I can't remember his name, but he is a young man from a privileged background. And he doesn't even want the job. He's in the role because his dad thinks it's prestigious and wants him to take it. Anyway, long story short, You've Got Mail style. They are corresponding via these magical typewriters where Ingrid doesn't realize who is receiving her letters, but he right away realizes it's her. So there's kind of this one-sided awareness going on, but they do ultimately end up together. Anyway, and it ends up in this, the war between the gods ends up being the sort of central part of the plot. And she ends up going off to be a war correspondent. I don't know. It was just, it was a very unique fantasy world. Yeah. The ending, which I've spoiled enough. I will not spoil the ending. I will say you will want to, if you want to read this book, you will want to have the second book already pulled because it ends... A big part of the book is her like trying to find her brother, trying to figure out where she's going to be in terms of this, you know, escalating conflict. And yeah, the first book ends with some resolution, but also some giant cliffhangers. So yeah, Divine Rivals by Rebecca Ross. If you like, I'm not normally a huge fantasy reader, but I enjoyed this one. It's kind of like, a rom-com in a fantasy world with a bit of
nice.
War.
Is it, so there's definitely a sequel. Is it like a trilogy, a series, just two? Do you know?
I think it's just, from what I've seen, it's just a duology. So just the two.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I appreciate You're that not, in a world where it feels like everything is 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 books long. This, I feel like in some ways, this is a little bit like Song of Achilles. So I finally read The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid, which you probably read with your book club. Like in the, like 2 years ago, but I finally read it and it was so good. It's a romance. But the setting is you have a present day aspect, but you were hearing the life story of Evelyn Hugo, who has been one of the biggest Hollywood celebrities, would have kind of gotten famous in like the 50s. So you're present day talking to now, I think she's in her 80s. And she is, of course, telling her life story, but through the lens of one of the things she's kind of famous for is this idea of she's had seven husbands. And they are all passed away by the point she's telling. So she's like telling her version of her life, and it includes each of these husbands. But there's just so many things I liked about it. The construct of like, it was a telling of a life story and using these husbands as a way to talk about different parts of her, like different parts of her life, but also it is her own story. I'm going back and forth on how much to spoil. So I think I will try not to spoil that much, but I feel like there were some unexpected twists that revealed some layers that aren't necessarily what you think of. Like when I looked at the cover and what I heard how everyone's book clubs were reading it, and when I read the synopsis, a lot of things in the book ended up kind of defying some of those expectations in really great ways. I will say, and I'll try to talk about this obliquely, I knew there was going to be some kind of twist in regarding the present day. I was correct, but I did not correctly guess the twist. So I will leave it at that. But I enjoyed that level. I thought the writing was really good. I thought the character of Evelyn Hugo was really a well-done, complicated woman, in the sense that you don't agree with every choice that she makes about her life. You are sometimes, but you are always rooting for her, like she's incredibly compelling. But there's also this element of, because in some ways kind of brings in this element of a little bit of like manipulation and celebrity, and why, like, you end up kind of rooting for her, even though you're not, like, you're also might be questioning why you are. But yeah, I just thought it was a really enjoyable read. And so, yeah. So if your book club has not yet read it, I suggest picking it up. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I've read that one, and man, maybe 2 years ago, but not for book club.
Yeah.
Oh, it is really good. I think I've read one other book by this author, but I have at least one other on my to read list. I think she's one of those authors that, like, basically anything she puts out, I will probably read eventually, because I just think she's just a good writer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting stories. Daisy Jones and the Six, I haven't read, but is another of her books that's very popular. And Carrie Soto is Back is the other one of hers I have read, which I loved.
Nice.
So my next book is a thriller. It's one of my most recent Book of the Month Club books. So I think it just came out, or maybe I'm not even sure if it is out yet, but it's Listen for the Lie by Amy Tintera. I might be Tintera. It's her debut, so I think it's a pretty impressive debut, I think. So anyway, it's a thriller of a very popular, there's some very popular tropes in it. First, like, it's a thriller where you're not quite sure if the protagonist has done what she's being accused of, and there's a true crime podcaster who is in town to try and tell the story. So I just feel like there are a million books out right now with, like, that are thrillers with this, like, true crime podcast or true crime journalist, like, trope. And I mean, honestly, I'm kind of here for it. I think it adds an interesting element to the book. Like, it breaks up the narration when you, like, finish a chapter and then there's, like, a little podcast script. So it allows for different voices without those voices being, like, part of the, I don't know, official story. I don't know quite what I'm trying to say, but I like it. Anyway, so this book, I read it in two sittings. It was very fast paced, very plot driven, which is what I want in my thrillers. The premise focuses on Lucy. She is our main character. She is accused, but there's not enough evidence to officially try her, of murdering her best friend, Savvy. She has amnesia, another popular thriller trope, does not remember what happened. And she fled town because while there wasn't enough evidence to try her, basically the whole town, one of those situations where the whole town was like, we know you did it. And, you know, even her parents thought she did it. Her husband at the time thought she did it. Anyway, so she leaves town and only comes back because it's her grandmother, who I think is turning 80 or 85. Her grandma was a great character in this book. She's one of the few people who does not believe Lucy could have possibly done this. And she's like, it's my birthday. I don't like getting on airplanes, so I'm not coming to you. Please come home and help me celebrate. Also, there's this podcaster in town that is trying to reopen the case. Yeah. And so the podcaster and her actually kind of become friends and, yeah, I don't want to spoil too much, but they end up kind of working together. One thing I liked that I don't often find in thrillers, it was actually kind of funny. Like, there was good twists and turns and, like, all the, like, psychological stuff you want in a thriller. But Lucy herself was kind of, like, sarcastic and self-deprecating about her situation. And I was like, oh, for a, you don't often, like, I don't know if I laughed out loud, but there were definitely moments where I, like, was like, oh, that was funny, which is not what you're expecting in a thriller.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, listen for the lie if you like thrillers. If you don't like thrillers, you probably won't like it. But if you do, yeah, add it to your list.
That's awesome. I was like, that sounds familiar. And I finally put it, I listened to another podcast called The Popcast, which is like comedy, pop culture, really fun podcast. And I just listened to the episode where they at the end of every episode, they have like a green light section and a red light section for various media things that they've consumed. And they recommended Listen for the Lie. So yeah. That's now two different people who have recommended. So maybe I'll have to put a hold in for it. So
yeah. So on the next book you're going to talk about, if you liked this, the book you're about to talk about, you will like Listen for the Lie.
You will like, nice. So yeah, when we compiled these lists independently, but it was amusing to see the connections and the through line between different recommendations on our list. So my next one is related. It is also a thriller. It also has podcast connections. It's called I Have Some Questions for You by Rebecca Mackay. The setting for this one is, and I think the setting is in some ways part of what drew me to it. It's a boarding school in New England, which I don't know why that interest me, but I heard that and was like, oh, boarding school, New England. Oh, that's another, great.
Oh, sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, that's another popular thriller trope that I can't help but pick up. Like, yes, give me a boarding school, give me a bunch of rich teens in the woods. Every time I'll read it.
Yeah. I don't entirely know why that is, but I did enjoy it. I had never read anything by Rebecca Mackay, but yes, I thought this was a well-done thriller. Again, it kind of has that two timelines. You have both the current investigation, and then you also have the, like, what happened in the past. So you're kind of getting snippets from both. One thing I really liked that she had the narrator do is, like, because, and again, I think this happens in a lot of thrillers, there's a lot of different cases where, like, a lot of different potential suspects show up throughout the plot. And partly because, so the narrator herself is someone who has ended up producing podcasts as something that she does, and kind of inadvertently, but partly through her own interest and obsession with the case, because she was at the high school when the girl, so it was a high schooler who was murdered during her time there. So she has this interest in the case. But one of the things she does that I really like is that when she kind of talks about, or a suspect comes up that they're like, oh, well, it could have been this person, she then takes, like, there's a chapter in which she essentially envisions what that would have been like or how it would have happened. And again, not graphically, but just, like, creating that scenario for you as the reader. Yeah, I thought that was just a interesting approach. And yeah, I thought the writing was really good. I liked the character. And it's not necessarily unreliable narrator, but there is often that level, I think, especially when you have someone who is going back to high school, and high school for a lot of us is not always the best of times. And so there's levels of, like, well, how were you presenting in high school, and what were you saying, and how were you really feeling? And so there's some layers that come get peeled back as you learn more, both about the narrator and the case that actually happened. So yeah, I think you could probably read either or both of these. They are, it sounds like a similar book.
Yes. I will say, I Have Some Questions for You, listeners. I will just say the ending kind of made me mad. So I don't want to give anything away, but
yes.
Feel free to share your opinions with us.
I did forget I was going to say about this. Like, so I was trying to figure out how to talk about the ending without it being spoilery. And I will say the ending was not as unresolved as I feared, but it was not as resolved as I had potentially hoped. So it does fill some of the things that a thriller is supposed to, but not necessarily in the way you expect or fully and completely.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I would call Listen for the Lie a thriller. I Have Some Questions for You Man, is it more of a mystery? And where is that line? I don't know. I have to like look at the trope definitions because
that actually, now that you bring that up, I think I was just kind of calling it a thriller because it has so many connections to listen.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it is a mystery. I don't think it is a thriller because there isn't, I mean, I definitely was reading because I wanted to find out what was going to happen. But I don't feel like it has all of the same pacing that a thriller does. I don't know. Well, I guess someone else who's read it can weigh in.
Tell us the difference. Someone more familiar with like the rules of genres.
Yeah.
The last book I want to talk about. So I read this one back in January. So I hopefully can remember enough of it. But I read and really enjoyed Check and Mate by Allie Hazelwood. She has kind of become a big name in romance writing in the last couple of years. The Love Hypothesis was her first and was like very, very big and is great. You should definitely read it if you haven't. Yeah. Check and Mate felt a little different from her other books. I think it's billed as YA. Again, sort of like Divine Rivals, it's that weird liminal space where they're, I think it's billed as YA, but the characters are actually maybe 20. So what Jason Samuel would call baby adults. Anyway, so Check and Mate is, it's a very light romance. I think I read this one in one or two sittings as well. The main character is a young girl who's 19 or a young woman of 19 or 20 who is an amazing chess player, but she, her father passed away and her relationship with chess was like really altered by her relationship with her dad to the point where she just quit playing when her dad passed away. So she was rising the ranks through the whatever young chess world. I actually know nothing about chess. So anyway. So yeah, and so she quit when she was in like her teens. Flash forward to today, and her friend is like roped into some tournament for charity, a chess tournament, of course. And she's like, you've got to play. I need you on my team. And she's like, okay, fine. So she ends up going and ends up there being some big wig chess players that are there for like practice, including the current like number one ranked chess player in the world, who of course is a 20-year-old young man from North America, from the United States, who's also like a dreamy heartthrob. And she beats him. And this causes sort of like a little media sensation in the chess world. And then she goes back into hiding. And this guy, this chess guy is so fascinated by who this girl may have been that he like goes out of his way to like track her down and kind of try and rope her back into chess. So even if you know nothing about chess, which clearly I do not, it was just a cute little romance. Yeah, I enjoyed it. If you're looking for something light and fluffy, it might fit the bill. And because it's YA, if you have concerns about spice level, it was pretty, pretty tame.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I recall.
I've read other Allie Hazelwood, but I haven't read that one. And it seems like it follows a lot of all of her stuff so far, at least has this some connection to STEM. So I can see how chess would be her YA connection. So my last one is, I think I actually read this further back, but it's called Killers of the Flower Moon by David Gran. It is a nonfiction book. It is, you've probably heard it mentioned because the movie came out in just the last 3 months or so, 4 months, something like that, and got a lot of rave reviews. I have not actually seen the movie. I maybe will at some point. However, so just the basics of what Killer of the Flower Moon is, it's about a series of, so in Osage County in Oklahoma, and this, I think it mostly takes place in like the 1920s, 30s, 40s, the Osage people, Indian tribe, go from being essentially very impoverished by all of the restrictions and reservations they've been put in, but somehow through some excellent work by a couple of tribal members have held on to the concept. They don't have the land. They have lost, their land has been stolen. Their land has been stolen by the U.S., but they have retained the rights to what is underneath the soil, which turned out to include a lot of oil, which makes them all millionaires. However, they are still living in an incredibly racist society in the U.S. And so they are also assigned guardians. And so it creates, they end up in this interesting third space. They don't have like full rights. They're not really considered fully authentic individuals by much of society or the individuals around them, but they are also have a lot of money. So it tells the story of one particular Osage woman who, well, she ends up marrying a white man, but all of her parents and her sisters, all of them end up getting killed in pretty clearly murderous ways, but without a lot of, like, they don't have, the things aren't getting solved, which, shocking, turns out the police aren't particularly great at investigating this type of thing. And so this story itself caught a lot of attention. And I, from my understanding, it's that's what a lot of the movie is about. I think I will, this is a history thing, so I will include the spoiler, but basically it ends up being the uncle who, so her husband is involved in this plot, and it is his uncle who is this very, very powerful, rich, politically connected person who was kind of behind these. And that is kind of like the one of the tragedies. Not tragedies, I mean, it's a horrific crime, basically. But the reason I really liked, I mean, this is a highly readable, like, even knowing that, you will still be caught up in the story. Like, I knew that the bare facts of that before I read the book. It's highly readable, fascinating history. It also brings in a lot of the story of what eventually led to the, like, to solving the thing and being able to accuse the uncle and ending this, or ending his power reign, was essentially the same thing that led to the creation of the FBI, because it took an outsider perspective to come in and do what the local law enforcement were unwilling to do. However, the reason I really liked this book, and one of the reasons I haven't seen the movie, so I can't make judgments about that. But what I really like that David Grand did is he didn't just leave the story there. He kept looking at this, because it's all too easy to just be like, oh, this was just this one evil uncle, super bad guy. Oh, how horrible was he? He killed all these people. But no, this took place. There are many unsolved murders. This was not just the uncle, and many of them remain unsolved. And basically what this reporter ends up figuring out is that this was, like, this wasn't just one person. There was so many people in this who were in these guardianships. Like, so many Osage Indians died in this time at young ages from suspicious poisonings, from car accidents that seemed like they shouldn't have happened. I mean, like, all sorts of stuff happened. And so much of it to today is unsolved and won't ever be solved, because it's so far back. Like, there isn't, we won't necessarily know. And there's this, I think he just really does a great job at taking both, telling the individual nature of this particular story, but also pointing out how this was also a community of white people basically killed and took advantage of the Osage Indians, because they were like, hey, we don't think you're worthy of rights and you have a lot of money. So they did horrible things. So I probably made it sound like a huge downer. And it is not necessarily a happy, happy book, but I will just say it was excellently written, super fascinating, very nuanced, and just a really excellent read. So I don't read a huge amount of nonfiction, but this kind of narrative history nonfiction is one I enjoy, and I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, this shows how much I follow movies, which is not at all. So all I knew about the movie of Killers of the Flower Movie is that of Killers of the Flower Moon is that it was 3+ hours long. And so because of that, I knew I was never going to watch it ever. but I think I knew that it had themes related to, like, indigenous groups, but I had no idea anything else. So anyway, I think I might read that book. So thank you.
Yeah.
Sounds like the sort of book I would enjoy, and a movie I will never watch.
that is actually part of what, because, like, I heard about the movie before I heard about the book, and had a similar kind of, like, that sounds really long. I don't know if I want to watch, because I also just don't tend to like, I was like, that the themes of, like, abuse and people getting away with stuff, power hungry things. And I was just like, I don't think I'm going to watch that, because I'm not going to like, you know, I don't think I'm going to watch it. So I was like, I'm going to read the book. And yeah, highly
recommend. Weird. I don't want to watch a 3-hour movie because, I don't want to watch a 3-hour movie even if it's happy, but I definitely don't want to watch one if it's like a bummer. But I'll sit down and read a book for 10 hours. That's a really.
I know. Same. I spent way more time consuming this story than I did if I just watched the 3-hour movie. But I.
Yeah. It's something about, I think it's just easy. I don't know. It's easier to process. I don't know. I think. I'm with you. I don't read a lot of nonfiction, but yet that history nerd piece of me, and I suspect you, can click on for the right topics. And then you're like, I just kind of want to know. I want to know more than the movie's going to tell me. I want to know. Want to know it all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it was. Yeah. Well, and I will say this was written actually, I think David Grant is actually a journalist. So it's like telling a story of history, but through that kind of that lens. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for enduring 8 book reviews with a few other random recommendations. Our final just announcement / reminder before Abby does her outro is just we do still have a Patreon and we appreciate and love all of you who have signed up. And yeah, if you are interested in knowing more about that, you can go to patreon.com/plainwrongpod. Joining gives you access to our occasional newsletters. I think we're probably due to get another one of those out soon. Public thank yous in our season wrap-ups. And at our highest level, the discernment committee, you get a say in the content we cover when we're covering things like books and movies. It helps us cover the costs like our hosting fees and purchasing media and equipment. So thank you to everyone who is a part of that, and patreon.com/plainwrongpod if you want to learn more and join them. Become our favorite people.
Exactly. So thank you to listening to this week's episode about books we enjoyed. We'd love to hear your thoughts on our upcoming change in format, ideas for this season, as well, of course, as your recommendations, corrections, and other musings. Our next episode, we will be interviewing Steve Nolte, a historian and researcher who literally wrote the book about the Amish. So you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram at plainwrongpod, or email us at plainwrongpod@gmail.com. And we also always appreciate it when people leave reviews and subscribe, as that is how other people learn this podcast exists. Thanks for tuning in.